Hello and welcome to Startup. I'm Alex Blumberg. And some of you have been listening to me say these words for a long time, since all the way back to the very first episode of this podcast in 2014. It started this way. I'm Alex Blumberg, and for a long time, I was a producer at the public radio show This American Life, and also the co-creator of a podcast called Planet Money, where for years, I reported on business and the economy. It was a great gig until I decided to do something rash. I decided to take what I learned from reporting on other people's businesses and start my own business.
Are you meeting someone with money?
Back in 2014, I laid out the premise of what I was doing. I was trying to start a business while simultaneously telling the story of starting that business in a podcast. And I was going to focus on all the little details, down to what kinds of shoes I was going to wear to my first ever investor meeting. My wife, Nazneen, didn't like the shoes I'd chosen.
They're fine. There'd be a higher chance that he's going to give you money if you're not wearing running shoes.
Don't you think that's true?
These are the only shoes that I can wear that my feet don't hurt.
I ended up wearing those dorky shoes to the pitch. It was not successful, not surprisingly. And I kept recording. I recorded difficult negotiations with my co-founder, tense conversations with my wife, other pitches to investors. I thought I was making a 6 to 8 episode miniseries, but it turned out I was launching a show that would continue for many years and would document all kinds of milestones in the history of this new company that I was making. For example, I recorded the moment I partnered with my co-founder, Matt.
So the final thing to discuss, which we had put on the agenda for last time, is to follow up our conversation of where we see this relationship going.
Yeah, checking in on it.
I recorded choosing a name for the company.
Gimlet.
Sure, easy to spell. Sounds kind of like Mad Men, sexy.
I'm okay with Gimlet.
I documented the moment my wife, Nazneen, who in the beginning worked as a TV producer, eventually joined me and Matt to help run Gimlet.
Now we're going to work together. Look.
Look at us going to work.
Living the dream.
Is this the dream?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's my dream.
We're living it.
And over time, the podcast I'd accidentally started branched out into new territory. We hired a new host.
From Gimlet Media, it's Startup. I'm Lisa Chow. Any big success requires looking failure in the eye.
And Lisa started following other founders, launching their own companies. Two women who launched a dating app, several friends from college who, without actually meaning to, started the billion-dollar streaming company Twitch. And most recently, she told the story of Eva Moskowitz, the controversial founder of Success Academy, one of the fastest-growing education startups in the world. And we continued to follow what was going on here at Gimlet, the growth of our company, from our first few employees through our 20th, our 50th, and eventually our 100th. We documented our attempts to increase diversity, to decrease burnout, and to manage the chaos that inevitably comes with running a fast-growing startup. And here I am now, 5 years after that first startup episode dropped, to document a bold new chapter in Gimlet's history.
Spotify. I'm a big user. Dave, big user. I know Carl.
Yes, we are as well.
This is footage from the CNBC program Squawk on the Street, the episode that aired February 6th, 2019. The hosts, Jim Cramer and David Faber, are about to welcome a guest to the program.
This morning, and this is a big, special, exclusive interview for us. I'm quite excited about this. Spotify's co-founder and CEO, Daniel Ek, right here at Post 9. Daniel, I've got to ask you right up front. Podcasts. I understand they are red hot, and what we want is an aggregator. I didn't think that a music company would do it, but I do think that an audio company would do it, and that's what this is about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really about expanding our mission from just being about music to being about all of audio and being the world's leading audio platform.
The thing that they're talking about here, the reason Daniel Ek showed up at Squawk on the Street to talk to Jim Cramer and David Faber, is because of an announcement that had just come out that morning. Spotify was acquiring two podcast companies for hundreds of millions of dollars. A podcasting technology company called Anchor and a podcasting content company based in Brooklyn called Gimlet. In this season of Startup, the final season, we're going to wrap up the story that we started over 5 years ago. And I can't imagine a better final chapter than the one we're about to tell you. Over the next several episodes, we're going to share with you what an acquisition looks like from the inside. In the first season, I learned that starting a company is a very emotional experience. What I didn't know then is that selling one, that's pretty emotional too. And just a quick warning here at the top, there is some swearing in this episode.
And so down the left-hand side is revenue split out by show or property.
So just to go over that, so it's like B through H.
This is taped from a meeting in late March of 2018, almost a full year before Spotify's announcement on CNBC that they had acquired Gimlet. And back during this meeting, the idea that a year from now we would be selling our company is really hard to imagine.
Row 41 is the profit line.
The voice you hear is Jim Grau, our VP of finance. He's walking a few of us on the company's leadership team, me and Nazanin and Matt, through the numbers for the year. And the numbers, they're not great.
Like, what is our burn rate? What's our projected burn rate for the year?
Yeah, so if you go down to...
Burn rate. In other words, how much more were we spending than we were making? Now, spending more than we made was always part of the plan. That's what most startups do early on. And just 9 months earlier, we at Gimlet had raised a big round of funding, $15 million. The plan was to invest a lot of that into making more shows, hiring more people. We wanted that big chunk of money to last for a while, 2.5 years. Meaning, we wanted to burn about $6 million a year. But at this meeting, Jim is telling us that right now, in early 2018, it's looking like we're going to burn a lot more than that.
So something like probably $10
million, $11
million, $1 million a month is probably where we're headed towards if we don't change some things.
In other words, if we keep going the way we're going, by the end of the year, almost that entire investment we just got will be gone. And that's because a lot of the things we assumed would happen didn't. We assumed audiences would grow, but instead they plateaued. Our launches had not done as well as they had in the past. And some of our biggest shows with the largest audiences still weren't making money because we couldn't sell ads on them. Shows like Science Versus.
The last season was very sold out. This season is not super sold, so.
What's this? What's
empty spots?
God, how much? What's it? What's it at?
In terms of how many spots are unsold, I don't think.
What's the percentage? Like, what's the sell-through rate so far?
10%, 15%.
It's 10% sold.
That's a little bit, that's counting the next season too. Probably like 20 to 25% sold.
Why is that's, God, that's bad.
Bad because if we can't make money on our biggest shows, what does that mean for the rest of the company? Because the fact is, Gimlet's specialty up until this point, our business model basically, had been to make a kind of podcast that costs a lot of money. A kind of podcast that requires big reporting trips, large teams of 4 or 5 producers and editors and engineers. That kind of show had a proven track record. For example, This American Life, Serial, Radiolab, they're all that kind of podcast. And that kind of show, for the first couple of years at Gimlet, it worked for us. But at the time of this meeting, 4 years into the company, there was another kind of show that was getting more and more popular. A kind of show that wasn't what we specialized in. Shows like Pod Save America and My Favorite Murder and the Dax Shepard podcast. These shows rely on a charismatic host connecting with fans, and they're much cheaper to produce. And the audiences for these shows are huge, way bigger than the audience for any Gimlet podcast. These shows, we never mention them by name during this meeting, but they lurk behind every word of the conversation because of what their success seems to suggest for us. That maybe we at Gimlet are spending a lot of money making something that people don't want anymore. To me in particular, that was a scary thought.
If it ends up being that we can't make, that there's no business model to support, good programming, like, that fucking sucks. Yeah, we're in this ad-supported world that prioritizes, cheap mass market. And we definitely need to start doing that. But I'm just like, that sucks.
Having to make a different kind of show, that was scary to me. But it wasn't as scary to Matt. To Matt, what was scary was me and my resistance to change. It seemed to ignore the basic math, that a show made by just a producer and a charismatic host that comes out frequently and finds a big audience, that show will be more profitable than anything we were making right then.
The thing that keeps me up at night is, like, we are super fucked if we don't have a much lower cost per episode model of production. And right now we don't have that. We don't know how to do it. There's a large chunk of the organization that has to reinvent the way it does what it does. if we just continue on our current pace, I don't think there are things that are going to improve. Like, I don't think all of a sudden audiences are just going to start growing and like sales will get better, but we can make decisions to improve revenue.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Yeah. But I don't want, obviously this is a conversation about cost as well as revenue.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay.
So how do you guys want to go through this? What makes sense?
When I listen back to this tape now, all I hear is everything that is not being said. The tension between me and Matt that's just sitting beneath the surface. Tension over the fundamental question of what kinds of shows Gimlet should make and what kinds of shows we shouldn't. This new financial pressure Gimlet was facing, it put that tension front and center. Startup producers Chris Neary and Molly Messick interviewed Matt and me separately about this time and how things felt between us.
Tell me about your relationship with Alex last spring, spring 2018.
It was a low point.
I guess the metaphor I want to use is like a romantic relationship. Last spring was the real time where it was like, we've been married for like 7 years. We have kids. We have a mortgage. And we start fighting. And I don't think we ever said the word divorce, although you might correct me on that.
How did things feel between you and Matt last spring?
I think it felt like we got into this dynamic where all of a sudden he was second-guessing the content decisions and I was second-guessing the strategy decisions. Or at least it felt like that to each other. I felt like he thought that I was like in it purely for the art and I didn't care about running a business.
During this time, like starting in spring, up through the sale of the company, what was your least generous thought about Alex?
I don't know if I want to say. I don't know if I have one or if I want to say. Like, my least generous thought was that, like, Alex is a child who doesn't want to grow up and just wants to, like, make art projects and doesn't care to understand the responsibility of building and running a company that has creativity at the center of it, but has a lot of other stuff around it that makes it all work. Alex is motivated primarily by craft and doing great work and creating an environment where other people can also do great work. And I always cared more about building a great company. And where those things came into conflict, that was where we would be fighting. I think it was a feeling thing to Alex. That's the other thing. That's the other, like, Alex is very feelings driven. And Gimlet is a very feelings forward organization. Like, when you walk around the halls, you'll often hear people in the hallways or even in decision meetings, like, that doesn't feel like the right thing, or that doesn't feel good, or that feels bad. And I'm much more of a logic person of like, well, let's look at the numbers and ask us what the numbers tell us.
So when someone at a meeting says like, I don't feel like that's the right thing, or I don't feel like that's that we can make a good show under those constraints, like, what's the first thought that goes through your mind when you hear someone say that?
The first thought is like, this is a fucking business, not a feelings factory.
Even though Matt never said that to me back then, I could feel this is a fucking business, not a feelings factory emanating from him in red hot rays of judgment, especially as Gimlet's financial pressures mounted. And I'd be sending my own red hot rays back at him. Our business is feelings. If you had any, you'd understand that. And of course, I knew we were running a business. And of course, Matt has feelings and knows that our business depends on them. But in the swirl of anxiety about Gimlet's future, we were becoming caricatures to each other. Anyway, these thoughts, we buried them. Until one night in mid-April, they came out. The fight, it kicked off on the phone. Matt and I were talking about a launch date for this show we were making called The Habitat.
Habitat was a 7-episode documentary miniseries. It was hosted and produced by Lynn Levy, a producer at Gimlet. And it followed this crazy NASA-funded experiment where researchers had set up a fake Martian habitat on the side of an incredibly remote mountain in Hawaii and stuck a bunch of volunteers inside for a whole year. The experiment was meant to test how humans might react psychologically to living on Mars. Lynn had found out about the experiment and given the volunteers recorders before they went in. So the entire year, when they were stuck together in a big tent separated from all their friends and family, that entire year was on tape. It was a rare and ambitious project, blending science with human drama. It was exactly the kind of thing that Matt and I had set out to make when we started Gimlet. The problem was, turning that year of tape into a compelling series was hard, and it took a long time. Lynn and I spent hours together each week, editing, writing, refining, storyboarding. And at some point, all this work started to make no sense to Matt. When we'd greenlit the project, we estimated it would take a year of production time. But then that year stretched towards 2, and as the habitat took longer to make, the costs associated with it, like salaries and other costs of production, they grew beyond what we'd projected. We started to realize the show was going to lose money. And to Matt, standing back and looking at this situation, it just didn't make sense. He was all for ambitious content, but only if we could afford it. Plus, I'm the CEO of Gimlet. It felt crazy to him that I was spending hours and hours each week deep in the weeds on a project that wasn't going to help us out of our financial situation. But from my perspective, I felt like it was needed. The Habitat was a challenging show to make, and I had a lot of experience working on complicated documentaries. Plus, I felt like the show was going to be really great, and that would be good for Gimlet, even if it didn't make money. So I actually felt like it was a productive use of my time. Anyway, that's where we were when Matt and I had this call one night. We were talking on FaceTime, and the subject of the Habitat came up. Here I am again, talking to my producers, Chris and Molly.
Where were you when you were
at? I was in my living room, and he was at his house, I think. And he said something, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said something like, well, you know, why is it taking so long, you know, or something like that. And anybody who is familiar with that process knows that it's like the last thing you say to somebody is like, why is it taking so long? And I remember just like, I was just like, I don't know. It just felt like, I just felt like completely blamed and alone. And I was like, I got just enraged. And I was like, you know what? You fucking do it then. And I threw my phone down on the couch. And I was just crying. I was just like so enraged and upset and felt like, what are we doing? This isn't working.
He was like, I don't know what to do. And he just kept saying that. He's like, I don't know what to do. And he was crying. He was like under a huge amount of pressure. And I think what I remember my response being was extremely cold, logical, and analytical. Not saying what I should have said, which is like, Alex, it sounds like you are in an incredibly difficult position and you're under a ton of pressure and you don't know what to do. And you feel like the options have like closed in on you. And like, you know, and just, you know, empathized with what he was going through and then said, like, let's explore some possible options here. There was a different way that I could have handled it that would have shown more humanity.
Why didn't you show more humanity?
Because I was afraid that I couldn't have told you this in the moment, but looking back, I was afraid that by acknowledging the difficulty of the situation and acknowledging his pain and frustration, that I would be creating a space for failure. Yeah.
It sounds like you're describing a situation in which you felt like you had to constantly hold the line, uh-huh. Or in that situation, you had to hold the line. Yeah. Was that a hard position to be in?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
I felt like I was taking it on my shoulders alone to make the company, to make the business successful. And that if I didn't hold the line or like, then no one else would. And we would just become like a boutique art factory that eventually ran out of money.
In April of 2018, the Habitat launched. It became the biggest launch ever in the history of Gimlet. It rocketed to number one and stayed there for almost a month. Millions of people listened to it. But also, it didn't come close to making back the money we'd spent on it. So Matt and I, we were both right and we were both wrong. And we were no closer to resolving the issue between us. If anything, that issue was just growing more tense and threatening to divide us further. And then a call came from out of the blue. A call that seemed like maybe could be a way out. That call, coming up after the break. Welcome back to Startup. I'm Alex Blumberg. So deep in 2018, this is where things stood at Gimlet. The business wasn't working as well as it had. We had flat audiences, ad sales were down, and our shows were very expensive to make. And on top of all that, Matt and I were fighting a lot about the direction of the company. But even if we couldn't agree on a big vision, we could see that there were some smaller things that might help turn the business around. And so we started trying stuff. Stuff like this.
When Rob was a kid, he broke his arm. Or that's what he's always thought.
Everyone in my family swears that I never broke my arm.
Now, Rob doesn't know what to believe.
Either I'm telling the truth, Jonathan, or I'm completely insane. And it could be that I'm insane.
I'm Jonathan Goldstein, and on the...
This is a promo. Essentially, a 30-second advertisement for a Gimlet show. In this case, a show called Heavyweight. And the idea is that we would put this promo on other Gimlet shows. Now, this is not a new idea. In fact, it's been around since the dawn of entertainment. TV does it all the time. You'll be watching NCIS, and it'll give you an advertisement for some other show on the network. But somehow, taking this simple step of telling the audience of one Gimlet show about another Gimlet show, we had never actually done it in a consistent manner. Partly because there'd never been someone in a position to do it. But one of the changes we made was we moved one of the people on our leadership team, Caitlin Kenny, into a new position, a position that had not existed before, overseeing all of the existing programming at Gimlet. And in that capacity, she was able to finally put in place the system where every show made a promo and every show carried a promo. We made other changes as well. Remember how we were struggling to sell ads? Since the beginning of the company, we had prioritized selling ads on new episodes over old episodes. But, you know, a listener who discovers, say, Reply All for the first time, they might go back and listen to the entire archive. And the data showed that lots of people did that. And so our head of sales, Anna Sullivan, made it a priority of her sales team to sell ads on those archival episodes as well, unlocking a lot of potential new revenue. Another thing, we actually invested in marketing. We started advertising our shows outside of just our own network, on Facebook and Twitter, and on the home screens of podcast players like Stitcher and Overcast. We started putting more resources into things like show art and logos. And we did this.
Hi, I'm Molly Fisher. No, I'm sorry. Alex.
This is an outtake from an early mic test we did for a new show we started making in 2018.
Okay. Okay.
That's Molly Fisher you hear, an editor at New York Magazine's The Cut, which we were partnering with to make a weekly show featuring women's voices on issues of culture and style and politics. The show was part of an effort Nazneen was leading. Nazneen had taken a new role around this time, head of new show development, which meant she was trying to do what Matt and I could not, figure out a new kind of show that had a lower cost of production, but still felt like a Gimlet show, consistent with what we'd been making for the last 4 years. The show was one of her first attempts, and it was Molly's first time ever hosting a podcast.
Hi, I'm Molly Fisher. I'm an editor at The Cut, and I'm the host of this podcast. We're at our weekly edit meeting, and that was my boss, Stella Buckby, The Cut's editor-in-chief.
But the thing was, we had no idea if any of this stuff would make a difference. Would promos and better logos actually increase audiences? Would our new sales tactics lead to more revenue? Would anyone actually listen to the new shows we were making? We wouldn't know the answers to any of these questions for many, many months. And then, in the midst of all this, something happened that felt so much bigger than anything we were working on.
I got an email from it came from the head of global sales.
Here's Matt again, and he's talking about an email he received in the spring of 2018 from the global head of sales at Spotify.
And he was like, hey, we're beginning to think more about podcasts and, you know, we respect you and your leadership in the podcasting space, and we'd love to have you come in and talk to us about it.
Matt wrote back, said sure. They settled on a date. And then a day later, he heard from one of our board members.
Pat, who was on our board, said, hey, I got an email from this banker that I know who is very close with Spotify, and he's aware that this meeting is happening. And he says that they are seriously considering, like, whether to buy you.
Now, when Matt mentioned this conversation to me, despite all the problems that we were wrestling with at Gimlet, despite all the conflict between me and Matt, it was hard for me to imagine actually wanting to sell the company. Because for me, even though running Gimlet was the most stressful job I'd ever had, and I'd spent more nights lying awake in the last 4 years than I had my entire life previously, at the same time, I'd never felt more engaged. I was propelled into work each day with a sense of purpose and adrenaline. I didn't ever have that Monday morning feeling like, oh shit, the week is starting. But for Matt at this moment, with all the conflict between us over the direction of the company and the kinds of shows we were going to make, his feelings were starting to shift. He wasn't sure that he and I could ever come to an agreement on what to do. And so selling the company felt, for the first time to him, like maybe a solution, a way out. Then, just days before Matt was supposed to go to the meeting, we heard from our board member again.
Pat came back and he's like, all right, I got more information. This is the meeting. And here's how it's going to go. You're going to walk in there. There's going to be all these people around the table. They're going to ask you a bunch of questions about Gimlet, how you view podcasting, what's happening with the industry, what's happening with Gimlet specifically, what your ambitions are. And then after the meeting's over, you're going to stand up, you're going to leave the room, and then someone is going to pull you aside and say, hey, good meeting. We would like to talk about acquiring Gimlet. And are you, you know, open to that?
Okay.
So now I'm like, oh my God, this is like the meeting. This is like a huge deal.
A huge conversation like this about Spotify acquiring Gimlet was something Matt felt he should prepare for. So he got some of our board members on the phone and he gamed out what he would say if the situation did in fact unfold as the banker said it would.
I was going to say, wow, I hadn't expected that.
This comes as a surprise, even though I've been preparing a script in my head.
Yeah, exactly.
For last week.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. I thought this was just a conversation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have to think about that. But, you know, certainly we're open to the conversation.
The day of the meeting comes. Matt heads into Spotify headquarters, visualizing the meeting in his head the way the banker friend said it would go. There'll be lots of people around the table. They'll ask him lots of questions about podcasting. And then someone will pull him aside and say they'd like to talk about acquiring Gimlet.
I get there early. I have a big cup of coffee before I walk in. I wear my nicest shirt. I walk in. All those people around the table. And the meeting was like an hour and a half, I think, maybe 2 hours of just like peppering me with questions, questions, questions. And I answered all of them. So, you know, whatever, the meeting ends. And they're like, thanks for coming in. And I'm like, yeah, good to see you guys. And they start getting up from the table. And I'm like, should I stay sitting at the table? But they all start getting up and leaving. So I'm like, okay, I'll get up and leave. And I'm like hovering outside the door.
Because somebody's supposed to come and pull you aside.
Yeah,
like that was what Pat was saying was going to happen.
And I just kind of like lingered there being like, where's the person pulling me aside? And I'm like, he's like, do you need something? I'm like, no, thanks. See ya. And then I left.
So nobody came up.
No. So there was no pull aside.
This was not the moment where Spotify approached us about an acquisition. And in fact, there wouldn't be that moment for many, many months. This was not going to be an easy way out of the problems we were facing at Gimlet. This was not an easy way out of the conflict between me and Matt. Coming up on the next episode of Startup, Matt and I do finally face that conflict. Plus, what was going on with that meeting? We hear about it from Spotify's point of view. Startup is hosted by me and produced by Molly Messick and Chris Neary. It's edited by me and Devin Taylor. Mixing by Emma Munger and Bobby Lord. Mark Phillips wrote and performed our theme song, Build Buildings, wrote and performed our special ad music. Additional music by Emma Munger, Blue Dot Sessions, and Jupiter. If you want to revisit the scrappy early years of Gimlet, we have a special Spotify playlist where we've collected all of those past episodes for you. Go to gimlet.media/startup. And you can get every episode of the show for free
through Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next week.